You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Good afternoon. Reporting remotely for WFHB, this is Don Guerra.
And I'm Alex Dieterer. This is the WFHB local news for Monday, March 1st, 2021.
Later in the program, WFHB Assistant News Director Sydney Foreman speaks with Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton in our weekly segment, A Few Minutes with the Mayor. In today's segment, Foreman asks listener-posed questions on local COVID-19 protocol and a new bill in the Bloomington City Council that would add protections for people experiencing homelessness. More coming up in today's feature report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, we revisit a segment submitted by WFHB correspondent Katherine Patterson. Patterson reports on an anti-abortion bill that recently passed through the Indiana House. More following today's headlines. But first, your local news brief.
From WFHB, this is the local news brief for Monday, March 1st. I'm Aaron Comforti. Local teachers with the Monroe County Education Association, the local affiliate of the Indiana State Teachers Association, the state's largest teachers union, protested newly proposed bills that they say would underfund the state's public schools. The newly proposed bills, winding their way through the state legislature, would give 40% of the state's education budget to the 10% of kids who go to private and charter schools. This is what Shelby, a member of the Teachers Association, said in a video posted on social media.
This bill diverts public funds away from public schools in order to give it to private schools and charter schools. This means wealthier families get more money to send their kids to private school. This in turn takes money away from our public school children who need it most.
Ben Yoder, an orchestra director with Hamilton Southeastern Schools, spoke about COVID-19 concerns in a video message as well.
Governor Holcomb is refusing to prioritize teachers for the COVID-19 vaccine while simultaneously asking us to reopen schools to in-person instruction.
Charter school proponents say that the schools bring innovation, more school choice, and freedom. This is what Shelley Yoder, a state senator from Monroe County, told WFHB about the lack of oversight on private school funding.
The voucher program, the charter schools, the private schools, there is no accountability. There is no transparency. Unlike public schools, where we have school boards that are elected by the people to make sure that their school corporations are run transparently and that people have a voice.
That's all for your local news brief from WFHB. I'm Aaron Comforti.
Monroe County Health Administrator Penny Caudill spoke about the Monroe County advisory level during the February 26th COVID-19 press conference. She mentioned the advisory level will remain in yellow.
Monroe County is still in yellow in terms of that advisory. So even though when you first go to that map of what's going on, you don't see cases, you see the metrics map, and what you actually see is flu. Well, that is because the metrics takes in the percent positivity rate as well as cases per thousand. They do the calculations and it comes to 0.5, which is blue. However, our cases per 100,000 are still in yellow. And so we are not completely blue. And I just want to make that clarification for people. In terms of an advisory, we stay in yellow for 2 weeks. We don't automatically move lower.
Indiana University Health South Central Region President Brian Shockney stated COVID-19 inpatient levels were at an all-time low. Caudill mentioned COVID-19 testing clinic closures could have affected the number of reported local cases. She stated veterans who are over 50 years of age could be eligible for the COVID vaccine.
The veterans who are 50 and over and enrolled in VA are eligible to get vaccinated, and they can do that through the VA.
Caudill reported over 11,000 Monroe County residents have been fully vaccinated. Shockney stated Monroe County received additionally 1,170 Pfizer vaccine doses.
This is in addition to our normal allotment. They've seen how quickly we're able to put shots in arms and supporting us to want to do more. And so that will be an additional 70 appointments per day starting on Monday.
Caudill mentioned only Indiana residents are eligible to receive the vaccine in Indiana.
Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton gave the 2021 State of the City Address on February 25th. Hamilton spoke about what changes 2020 brought to the city and its families.
Think back just a year ago. Last year's State of the City was February 20th. I did not mention the words coronavirus or COVID. I didn't foresee what was coming. The first reported U.S. COVID-19 death was just over a week away then in the state of Washington. Let's think back. What has happened to your family and you since then? To your workplace or your school, your friendships, your daily patterns, your home and gatherings with others, your plans, your worries. A city is a great big family, a collection of thousands of individual family stories that make up Bloomington's story.
Mayor Hamilton thanked the numerous essential workers who fought to keep the community functioning. He mentioned that 2020 was not the end of hard times.
We still face major threats as a community. The worst pandemic in 100 years is not over. That is job one, to climb out of it and save lives. We will, but it will take many more months, perhaps all year. Continued strong cooperation among our health sector players, and continued good individual actions. Distancing and masking are essential, and will steer us to the calmer waters. Please, we have to stay the course even while relief is in sight. In the meantime, our economy is in a serious recession, certain sectors in a depression. In the past 12 months, our metropolitan area lost thousands of jobs, at one point nearly 12,000, and still many thousands are gone.
Hamilton reported the initiation of Recover Forward provided the community with over $8 million to combat the effects of the economic recession. He mentioned five other large city projects which are underway.
Many Bloomingtonians face serious housing insecurity. Together, in the past 5 years, we've created or preserved nearly 1,400 bedrooms of affordable housing and another 5,000 at market rate. Even as we continue this focus, we know many more are needed to address real pressures felt by so many of our neighbors or future residents. And the pandemic only intensifies the need and the risks. I greatly appreciate our United Way and Community Foundation stepping up to coordinate a regional response for our community. Number two, we have big infrastructure projects underway and in the pipeline. Thanks to the bicentennial bonds, we anticipate four major new trails at the Seven Line, at Griffey Lake, at Cascades, and from Switchyard Park past RCA Park. We will open two downtown garages this year, one replacement, and one supporting new jobs in the Trades District. We're investing nearly $40 million for historic upgrades to our downtown stormwater system, wastewater plant expansions, and water main replacements. We're adding electric buses and improving bus stops and expanding sidewalks and activating downtown alleys. All of this investment helps our city and supports hundreds of precious local jobs, too.
Hamilton stated the city has also committed to a hospital site redevelopment plan, undertook a new unified development ordinance, and climate action plan. He mentioned future decisions are to be made about the convention center site expansion and the John Waldron Arts Center. Hamilton discussed future work towards climate and racial justice.
Our community has been working on these two issues for years, on inclusion, investing in economic recovery with more and better jobs and more housing security. Our divided community's racial equity plan and new task forces, anti-racism training, and on sustainability, a climate action plan this spring, building on last year's sustainability action plan, a green ribbon panel by fall, and all the many historic efforts toward a more walkable, greener, high-quality city. As next steps, perhaps we should name some new goals to aim for, like an expanded, more subsidized network of public transportation serving more people more effectively, like 300 new affordable housing units every year, like 500 new good-paying jobs every year, like increasing our diversity and lowering our per capita carbon footprint.
Hamilton said the city would work to align their ambitious goals with the available resources.
The Bloomington Board of Historical Preservation discussed the restoration of a commercial storefront damaged by an automobile accident during their February 25th meeting. The building is located at 118 South College Avenue. Petitioner Victor Gutierrez spoke about finding a match for the damaged bronze window frame.
So for the metal frame on 118, we have been looking for the closest metal we might be able to find to match that, but we have not found anything that it closely resembles the historical one. We did, however, get a sample for an anodized aluminum frame, which would be powder coated in dark bronze to match the color of the original and get as close as we can to that original look of the metal.
Board member Duncan Campbell questioned if the original bronze frame was repairable. Gutierrez mentioned plans to replace the existing damaged door with a window pane that would not allow for repair.
We have looked into repairs. The storefront did take quite a bit of damage, and another issue would be with the extension to where the door is. We would have to we wouldn't have any existing material to extend to that side.
Board members will continue the hearing during their March 11th meeting.
The Indiana House Environmental Affairs Committee has not met at all during the 2021 legislative session. According to a report by Sarah Bowman and London Gibson of the Indy Star, 13 environmental bills were filed in the House this year. However, none of those bills made it to the House Environmental Committee. Those bills included lead testing for preschool and daycare, a prohibition on dumping contaminated coal ash in unlined ponds that pollute groundwater, and limiting toxins in drinking water. The deadline to hear bills in the House has now passed, so that means these environmental bills died before any committee heard them. Meanwhile, the state of Indiana ranks as the second worst state in terms of toxic chemical pollution and long-term chronic health effects on state residents as a result of pollution, according to a study by U.S. News. The House Environmental Committee is chaired by State Representative Doug Gutwin, a Republican from Francisville who was appointed to the position in December 2020. Gutwin said in an email that pandemic protocols led to the committee not hearing any bills this year. Gutwin said, quote, "We've been more deliberate about hearing only legislation that is critically important to pass this year," end quote. According to members of environmental groups and committee members, Gutwin said the bills were too complex to be heard in a two-hour committee meeting. Committee members also said that the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency would take care of the bills the committee was supposed to address. A study by the EPA shows that Indiana has more toxic releases per square mile than any other state in the U.S. According to the EPA, Hoosiers are exposed to at least 1,000 more pounds of toxins per square mile than residents of surrounding states.
Now it's time for your feature reports. Last week, WFHB correspondent Catherine Patterson reported on an anti-abortion bill that has recently passed through the Indiana House of Representatives. For more, we turn now to Catherine Patterson.
A new anti-abortion bill passed through the House this Monday that some doctors say is unethical and unproven. The bill bans certain types of chemical abortions, makes it more difficult for minors to get an abortion, and requires doctors to tell patients seeking medical abortions that if they don't want to end up going through with the abortion, that they may not take the second pill and still have the child. Although the bill passed 67-29, multiple doctors spoke out against it last week, saying the bill itself would be dangerous for women in Indiana. Dr. Tracy Wilkinson was among those doctors. She said, quote, "The state legislature should not mandate a physician to tell a patient these falsehoods that could ultimately endanger their patients' lives." End quote. Those in favor of the bill say that it is more important for women to know their options before making such a big decision. Dr. Christina Francis says that women, quote, "should not have to go home and Google whether or not there is anything they can do to save their child," end quote. Another concern with the bill is that there are grounds to sue. Advocacy and Public Policy Director of the American Civil Liberties Union of Indiana, Katie Blair, says that the ACLU has been looking very carefully at this bill, and it is completely unconstitutional.
It would force health providers to lie to their patients and provide dangerous, false, and misleading information for abortion reversal that's putting patients at risk while ignoring science and the First Amendment rights of medical providers.
According to a study conducted by the University of California, 10% of women changed their minds about medical abortion. However, Blair says that the claim written in the bill is not the proper way to go. A study involving the reverse abortion plan was cut short due to dangerous complications, according to doctors protesting the bill on Monday.
No one benefits from when our health providers are forced to lie to us. It's outrageous and very dangerous. Was opposed by many medical organizations, and is not, abortion reversal is not anything that's supported by any, serious real health organization.
The bill is now being moved on to the Senate. However, Blair encourages any Hoosier who disagrees with the bill to contact their local senator to address their concerns. For WFHB, I'm Catherine Patterson.
Now it's time for the latest edition of A Few Minutes with the Mayor, a weekly segment where we pose questions to Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton on community issues. In today's program, WFHB Assistant News Director Sydney Foreman speaks with Mayor Hamilton about local COVID-19 protocol and a new bill in the Bloomington City Council, which would add protections for people experiencing homelessness. All that and more in today's edition of A Few Minutes with the Mayor.
Community members posted questions on our social media via Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, posing questions to Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton about current issues. Today, on A Few Minutes with the Mayor, John Hamilton answers these questions. So the first question that I have is, as the weather warms up, does the city plan to, again, allow downtown businesses to expand seating and retail space by means of closing off Kirkwood and blocking off parking spots for these expanded services?
Yes, as the weather warms up, we will probably be working again with those merchants and the restaurants and such on Kirkwood and potentially other places to look at how to ease their opening up to outdoor dining. Absolutely. I think we felt the community embraced it. People enjoyed that opportunity. It's always a balance between opening up that public space for seating to what you lose with transportation and parking and others. But I think overall, we're going to continue to work very closely to look at how we can use that space for more outdoor dining.
And as you mentioned, with those streets closed off, the parking spaces in downtown will decrease. How will the city make sure that there is enough parking for all of the customers that want to utilize these spaces?
Well, parking is always a complicated balance. The main thing we'll be doing is working with the restaurants and the proprietors there to try to help them with us figure out what's the best mix. When we redid Kirkwood last year, we put these bollards that are much easier. You can shut off one block at a time and you can take them in and out a little more easily. So we're going to be working very closely to balance that issue of using the public space for restaurants, for example, or parklets, that kind of thing, versus losing some parking. Now, the city loses some revenue with the parking spaces, but more important than that, I think it's trying to make sure we feel we're helping the vitality of the city and the vitality of those blocks, to maximize that. And of course, tons of people walk and bike and don't need parking spaces. And the more outdoor dining we have as the weather improves, the safer it is for everybody and the better it is to keep waiters and waitresses employed and cooks and employment is so important. So we'll just keep trying to balance it. And I think it's kind of a step by step and learn as we go.
So the next question that I have is, could you speak about how the testing clinic closings due to weather may have caused a false decline in the local reported COVID-19 cases?
Sure. Yes. When the testing numbers go down because of weather closings, that is a reason to be cautious about how many cases were noted, for example. And our health department's very conscious of that. We don't take a single data point or blip like that too dramatically. I do think it's really important to note that it's Indiana University that's doing tens of thousands of mitigation tests every week. And that was true. The weather limited that a little bit, but they've been doing really high numbers of tests. And the last couple of weeks, they've really come in at quite exceptional numbers of 0.2% positivity, or 2 out of 1,000 people. So that's really encouraging. None of these data points is itself determinative. And while the data is generally moving in a very positive direction for case numbers, for deaths, for positivity rates, for hospitalizations, we absolutely, in my view, need to keep doing what we're doing. The United States has still had the worst experience on the planet with this disease in terms of deaths. We did not handle this well. We're still digging out of the hole. We know some variations are coming, probably here already, that could cause another spike. We don't want to have another surge. So I'm going to be urging, and I hope we all can keep doing what we're doing with distancing and masking and being careful over the weeks ahead. Vaccines will be really important. I've got my appointment. I'm qualified now and have a mid-March appointment for my first dose. And I hope everybody, when it's your turn, will sign up to get a vaccine, because that's how we're going to ultimately get out of this pandemic.
Yeah. And you spoke about Indiana University for a moment there. And as these students kind of settle back into Bloomington, has the city noticed an increase in city gathering size limit violations, or have there been many reported parties?
I haven't had reports of a bump in that. I know our community is more active. We've got students back and we see them downtown and in other places, but I have not had a report of a significant bump up in violations. We do hope people, and we'll expect people, to continue to abide by the 15-person social limit. It's sometimes hard to notice those. If you do have a report of that, please go on the website or call and let us know if you see what you think is a violation of that. I want to give IU credit. I think they've taken two steps this spring that are indicative of their care. The commencement plans, which they've had to continue to keep very tight restrictions on, as well as the NCAA game plans, which people may notice in Monroe County are tighter than anywhere else in the state. I support them in that. On the other hand, they're hoping in the fall to have in-person classes again. So all these are step-by-step calibrations. And again, we're going to keep our eye out on that to make sure we keep everybody as safe as we can.
The Bloomington City Council held a robust discussion about a proposed ordinance regarding protections for people experiencing homelessness. This ordinance would set up a designated area for people experiencing homelessness to camp out at night if they have nowhere else to go. During the meeting, city staff seemed to generally be opposed to this ordinance. Could you speak about where the city stands on this proposal?
Well, thanks for the question. We care deeply. I care deeply. And I think most people in the city care deeply about trying to make sure we help people who are going through periods of homelessness or deep poverty and other causes, to help them find safe places to live, and frankly, more than that, to help them find ways to get their lives back on track as they hope them to be. It is true the administration does not support the idea of creating encampments in public parks for a number of reasons, which I won't go into all of them, but primarily focused on making sure our parks are safe and accessible to everyone, which they need to be, as well as the overall safety of people experiencing homelessness. You know, we're going to continue to work very strongly to expand permanent housing. We've added 1,400 bedrooms of housing for affordable housing over the last 5 years. We work very closely with the providers, whether it's Middleway or Beacon or other providers here in town, to help make sure we offer emergency shelter. But emergency shelter is not the long-term answer. It's really housing first for everybody. And we have a group looking at that regionally. I think ultimately the question is just whether an encampment is safe. We certainly don't think it's safe in the winter. And even in the summer, encampments, which are subject to pretty appropriately substantial public health requirements, need to have sanitation and public safety, and thinking about kids living in encampments and how that would work, it's very concerning. So I think the whole community is really focused and collaborating on how we help create more housing options for people who are going through homelessness, and will continue to do that. I think there are some who believe an encampment, permanent encampment, if you will, in a public park is a good idea as an interim step. I don't agree with that, but I respect that there are people who view that as a right approach. And I think the city council is going to weigh that. And ultimately, it's up to them to make a decision on whether they want to change the law and allow that kind of encampment in a city park.
As the ordinance states, the encampment would be allowed on any city property. Is there any way that a park would not have to be the utilized area for that encampment?
Well, the ordinance sets out certain standards for where an encampment could be in any city park. I think it's particularly, there's some geographic descriptions of that. And the real question is whether it's a good idea to have a formal outdoor encampment, particularly if we have other options for emergency shelter and for getting people out of the elements and into safe, hygienic, and better places to live. That's the goal. It's housing first, making sure everybody can get housing. The vast majority of people who go through a homelessness period are in and out of it relatively quickly. That's the goal. We want to make homelessness rare. We want to make it non-repeating, and we want to make it brief. And that's the focus. And an encampment, it's not clear that that helps us accomplish those kinds of objectives that I think the community shares.
Do you have a question for Mayor John Hamilton? Comment that question on this coming week's post for a few minutes with the mayor to have your question answered. For WFHB, I'm Sydney Foreman.
You've been listening to the WFHB Daily Local News. Today's headlines were written by Aaron Comforti, Cade Young, and Sydney Foreman in partnership with CATS, Community Access Television Services. Our features were produced by Sydney Foreman and Catherine Patterson.
Our theme music is provided by Mark Bingham and the Social Climbers. Engineer and executive producer is Cade Young. For WFHB, I'm Alex Dieterer.
And I'm Don Guerra. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast, as well as all other WFHB news programming online at WFHB.org.
The WFHB local news is available as a podcast. Listen to all of our news and public affairs programs wherever you find your podcasts. Subscribe and never miss another local news program.
Stay tuned for With Good Reason, coming up next on WFHB.